Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Damage Report. I'm Johnny Nerola. We are going to close things out right. A big Friday show, third day of the impeachment trial. It's going on right now, but don't pay attention to it. Okay, well, if anything big happens, we'll keep you apprised because Bart's in the chat or Edwin will tell me or Craig will tell me. It'll be cool. Don't worry about it. And in the meantime, we've got a lot to talk about, including what went down yesterday in the impeachment trial. Some big updates on the pandemic, not only the pandemic as it is, but the pandemic as it might have been, and a bunch of garbage people. So I'm very excited to see who my guest garbage person will be. I'm a little bit worried about one of the possibilities, but Brett Ehrlich, welcome all the same.
Hi, John. It's me, Brett. I'm so happy to be on the show today because I feel alive, alert, awake, enthusiastic. It's Friday, and I am just horny to be with you.
You know, I was gonna throw to this thing now, but now I'm worried about the trend that will start. What's going on Twitch soon, Brett?
So Twitch this evening after at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. So this is not the graphic we're gonna throw to. We have Common Room tonight, and tonight's Common Room is myself, Norma, who makes the graphics, Tim, who runs all the people who make graphics and stuff. And then also the last person is someone that I'm really excited also to have on, Julie, who does the Instagrammy stuff and the PR stuff. And Julie's gonna be on there. And I don't know what she's drinking, but the last time she gave me something to drink, it was this awesome Filipino like beverage that was delicious and citrusy, and I don't know what it's called, but it was fantastic. So we'll see how that goes down tonight on the Common Room. And then Sunday is Valentine's Day, and we at our household, the Brett and Brooke home, have a Valentine's Day Lonely Hearts mixer that we will be hosting at twitch.tv/TYT. This is the graphic where we will have fun drinking, games, fun. We'll play Among Us, Jackbox, show up. If you ain't got nothing to do, just go to twitch.tv/TYT and we can play some games together. I frequently delete the like PR emails that I get because I'm on a list of people who work in news. But there is one thing that I do want to share with everyone that this is the first time I've really asked for more materials because they don't really have anything to do with the kind of news we cover typically, but this one does match, and I've asked for more materials. It's a shibari tying up. It's this weird, kinky Japanese ritual of tying people up in very intricate knots, and we're gonna explore that.
Oh God!
So please join us.
Are you gonna explain? Are you gonna tell us the story of you getting your apparently full Maori tattoo? That you've got there.
Yeah. That's definitely my torso, and that's definitely
that's
my wife's
your torso.
Yeah, that's me.
That is you. That's you. That's how faces work. Faces are sharper than bodies. It's weird. I don't know why that is. Anyway, that sounds like fun, everybody. So twitch.tv/TYT is where you can watch all of that. You could also be watching us right now there. If you are, you know that you are. And also, when I am on the Young Turks later on today, leading the first hour of the Power Panel, that will also be available at twitch.tv/TYT. So thank you, Brett. Now, we've got a lot we're going to be talking about through the course of today's show. Brett and I are going to do our best to move expeditiously through the topics because there's a good bit here. But you're definitely going to want to stay tuned till the end because that's when we're going to whip out the garbage can and feed it a little bit of trash. It's impeachment week, so you know there's some good stuff. But before all of that, please hit the like button, share the stream so the people know we're live, and we'll be responding to your comments as we go. And with that said, Brett, why don't we jump into this thing?
Let's do it with the proper microphone activated. Thank you, chat.
That does sound good. I like that. I didn't even notice. This is how engaged I am. Anyway, okay, let's move into this thing. How serious are Republicans taking these impeachment proceedings? Well, as the House impeachment managers presented their argument back on Wednesday, you had Senator Rand Paul doodling. Senator Josh Hawley put his feet up while reading briefs in the gallery. Senator Mike Braun appeared to struggle to stay awake. Senator Rick Scott appeared to study a map of Southeast Asia. That's the most fascinating one. There's some like, I really want to dig into that and find out what was going on. Is he just a lifelong learner? Is he plotting a a trip. But anyway, Paul and Senator Limas refused to wear face masks because why not? They are Republicans. Several Republican senators were late to the proceedings or left for extended periods of time or chatted with each other during the arguments. Now, of course, in normal US criminal proceedings, jurors may be removed by the judge if they fall asleep, don't pay attention, or are late or absent, or actually participated in the crime that is being investigated. So that's fun, Brett. The last few days where we've been seeing more and more of this video footage, including a lot of new stuff, finding out more about how bad it could have been and how bad it actually was. They have been pretty much checked out from the very beginning. And that isn't even actually the worst thing they've been doing. We'll turn to that in a moment. But what do you think about the Republican jurors in this trial?
Many of them have already made up their mind. There is this weird, sad trap that we all seem to be falling, that I find myself falling into. I'm not gonna speak for others, where I fixate on the one senator who has changed his mind, one of the senators from Louisiana, who had voted after hearing the arguments to go ahead with agreeing that the impeachment itself is constitutional. And he's talking about how he saw some very compelling evidence from the first half, which is the prosecution and the impeachment managers. Now, just to keep everyone updated on what's happening in that, in the impeachment case, now they're just going through tweets and showing that, like, when the impeachment managers edited together videos showing what happened that day, that they edited out some things. And so what's happening now is this very delightful experience where the defense thinks they've got this, like, gotcha moment. So they play Trump's clips in their entirety. But what ends up happening is you realize that even in their entirety, Trump is either both the most incompetent president and the dumbest president ever to hold the office. And he's still inciting violence, and he's still essentially doing those things that he was accused of doing. It's just that they're relying on these jurors who aren't paying that much attention to now feel like they have an out to say, see, they edited out the part when he said that. And that's it. Because people like to see the side by side where it's like, here's where it cuts out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. As they continue on till today, and we're gonna talk a bit about what they will be doing. We know that it's going on right now. They've gotten a little bit of advice about some of the little tricky things they might be able to do. And that advice is coming again from those who are supposed to be deciding the merit of the charges and all of that, and instead are doing, you know, what's gonna be described here, a little clip from Newsmax with Jason Miller representing Trump's team.
David Schoen, what was this all about? Three GOP senators, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, went back into the cloakroom and apparently chit-chatted with the president's two attorneys yesterday. Was that a pep talk, or what was that all about?
A little bit of all of the above. I would say most of the points that the senators were raising, we have in our presentations and we have in our arguments. So that was good reinforcement for us that we're thinking about this in the same direction. But I'll tell you, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Mike Lee, these are some smart guys with some very good ideas. And I think President Trump is going to get the absolute best defense today. And it was a real honor to have those senators come in and give us some additional ideas. So we're appreciative for
that. I'm not a lawyer or anything, but that seems crazy. That just seems crazy that they went and they listened to the prosecution. They're like, interesting. Yeah, they really did try to sway us. Now I'm going to take that and give it to the defense. And they can do that, Brett, I guess, because there's no consequences for virtually anything.
Well, the whole idea behind having a jury is, and the thing that the Republicans are supposed to lie about and say is that they're impartial. Mm-hmm. That's what the senator from Louisiana is saying. He's like, I'm an impartial juror. He's citing Proverbs now, saying, like, I'm gonna wait until this actually is argued by the defense, but it's very, you know, persuasive so far. But they're supposed to lie. People like Ted Cruz are supposed to have enough internal shame to say, I'm just gonna keep an open mind through this. They're not supposed to then go and expose themselves as a wildly partial jury. These jurors who should not even be weighing in on this case in the first place, because they did the exact same thing that Trump is being accused of. So if Trump is convicted, they're convicted. If it was a normal jury selection, those
people- it should set a precedent in theory that there should be some consequences for them as well.
Yes, I would argue that I would argue the whole way that it's this moment that we all have when we see all these people acting the political theater, and you say, "What game are we playing?" Because we know what's happening, and that is there's a lot of law around that where it's like we know what's happening. We know you didn't say the exact words, "Go mess people up and stab them," but we are establishing that you are intentionally rejecting the results of the election to do something that is different than anything we've seen before. You are trying to end democracy in America. That is the only thing that they are doing, and it is more explicit than it ever has been. And they've set the groundwork for years and years and years on that side of the aisle, whatever the name of the party has been, to disenfranchise people.
Yeah.
And they've done it with off-season trades, essentially, off-season rule changes. But now they're trying to do it after the buzzer sounds and it's over.
Yeah.
That's what they were trying to do. And so they should not, so they should have been disqualified from the get-go. And now they're either, I mean, if the Trump defense team was more competent, I would call this jury tampering. But it's actually defense team tampering. Because they're so incompetent that now Lee, Cruz, and Graham need to go up there and say, "No, you idiots, you're making it so difficult for us to help you that here's what you need to do."
But and it's just another level than they already had. Like, they were already going on cable news to tell the defense team what they should do. Like, that's what Graham has been doing. He's been going on Hannity and saying, "Here's what I want to hear." Now, I guess that wasn't direct enough. So now they're just going and meeting directly with them.
Which,
and again, like, I don't know what the answer is. The system has been set up with a combination of some regulations written into the Constitution and some norms. And one of those norms is the assumption that you're not going to have people this corrupt, this partisan, immune to any reason, and buttressed by a base that desires those things. The expectation baked into the Constitution appears to be that if you get these, you know, like wannabe dictators, if you get these incredibly corrupt leaders, the people will turn against that. But that's a dumb assumption. If they think, well, this guy's awful and wants to end democracy and all of that, but he wants to do it and he's saying it's for me, a lot of people, it turns out, will find that to be very appealing.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
As we're filming this, the Trump defense is doing their thing. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the predictions going into it. And then a little bit of what I've been able to absorb during our prep for the show. We know that the former president's lawyers were expected to assert that his remarks to supporters that day are protected under the First Amendment, an argument that the House managers sought to preemptively rebut as they addressed senators on Thursday. Because obviously, like, the idea that you can't say things that will imminently lead to violence is the most obvious and well-established component of the First Amendment imaginable. But I guess we're gonna have to relitigate that. Mr. Trump's lawyers may also return to the matter of whether it's constitutional to hold the trial in the first place, which the Senate has already weighed in on. We've already had a vote and six Republicans joined the Democrats, but sure, spend a little bit of your limited time. And it's limited both initially, but it's gonna even be more limited by choice. So Mr. Trump's defense team has up to 16 hours over 2 days for oral arguments. But one of the lawyers says they may only use 3 to 4 hours. They might be done in like 2 hours. Once that done, senators will have up to 4 hours to question both sides. And I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of really serious, intellectually curious, incisive questions coming up, Brett.
The fact that they are going to use 3 to 4 hours speaks to how much the fix is already in. It speaks to how little, and it reflects all the stuff that we've already talked about on the show, which was that the Republican senators aren't really paying attention. They have already made their political calculation as to whether it is okay for them to vote to convict Trump. And there's already been a lot of, like, field, you know, hall passes handed out where folks can vote against the president because it takes 17 defectors to essentially convict. So it doesn't really matter. And they don't really have much to say. They are gonna go back to this First Amendment argument. It is kind of baked in to it is baked into their attempt to say, like, listen, we can say what we want to, Trump can say what he wants to say. But there's just something that's very shocking to me, is when we think back on what was holding the democracy, the American democracy together, it was a decision made by Donald Trump that he probably wildly regrets, and if given the opportunity to remedy it in the future, will never make again. And it was to look around and be like, what establishment figure is crazy in all the ways I needed to be crazy, but establishment enough for me to kind of get the blessing that I'm not going to get too crazy. And the answer was Mike Pence as vice president. And that was all that was really standing between us and all of this, right? Was Mike Pence was pretty crazy. I mean, crazy, like gay conversion therapy crazy, but not so crazy that he would like say, you know, I'm going to go along with Trump on this. And next time, if Trump is able to run again, willing to run again, hasn't died before that time from very, very natural causes that he is inflicting upon himself, especially now that I'm sure he's stress eating nonstop. But he will choose some lackey because he's proven he will choose some lackey. That's funny. He will choose some lackey who also will make the calculation that is being borne out right now, that the establishment of the party will go along with the winner, no matter what. And if the winner is Donald Trump, then they're going to go along with it, because the kind of thing that scared Nixon into resigning, which is the norms you were talking about earlier, the fact that, like, listen, something's going to happen. The senators looked around and were saying to themselves, listen, something's going to happen. Republicans, something is going to happen that's going to affect us negatively, because people have shame and decency in their hearts.
Yeah.
Now the news cycle's so fast and it's so unmoored from every modicum of accountability that now the next time, unless we impeach him and don't let him go, and I know there's a backup move of the 14th Amendment, but essentially if this continues, then maybe he won't make that same mistake twice and we'll be back at this point, except there won't have been Mike Pence to say, no, I'm going to certify these electoral
results. Yeah, and the point overall about the danger, not of him running and winning, but of him running and losing and then doing again what he did here, was made yesterday, is I think a very good one.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Some of the predictions about what the defense is going to be about are turning out to be true. A lot of people in the chat are correctly saying that it's just whataboutism. That's all that they're doing right now. They're trying to take any statement that they think is as bad and say, well, look, this other person said this thing in a totally different context that didn't result in violence and wasn't part of a pattern of glorifying political violence, and saying that that makes it all the same. And I think there's starting to be a reaction to this that I think more of us should think about. Not that there's going to be critical thought that's going to result in senators going one way or the other, but if there were, ask yourself, for instance, one of the things they're citing is other politicians who've said, you have to get out there and fight, or it's time to fight, or using fight, or whatever. So what does the word fight mean? And I think context is probably pretty important here. So if it's 300 days until the election and you say you got to get out there and fight, you could conceivably be talking about virtually anything political, right? And like, we're still in the primaries. You could be fighting to choose the right candidate. You could be fighting to register voters, all of that. Even right up until the election, get out there and fight, you know, have your voices be heard. You could give a little bit of money, you could drive people to the polls and all of that. But people are pointing out, on the morning of January 6th, what does fight mean? Because the election was months ago. All of your court cases have been going on for months and you've lost. The results are about to be certified. Your attempts to stop that from happening and send rival electors are already done. There is no place for random mobs of people at that point to do anything else that you would cloak under the guise of fighting politically. All there is a constitutionally mandated process ongoing a little bit away from your rally. So what other definition of fight is left other than go there, mob the building and stop the count from happening? There's no voting to be done. There's no candidates to be chosen. There's no other demonstrations to be held. You had the demonstration. After that, what remains for fighting? And this is obviously, this is far more than they're gonna get into because they don't care. They're not trying to actually claim that other politicians are being irresponsible. And it's again, like we've been saying all week, it seems so pointless because Ted Cruz doesn't have, he's not waiting for the right rhetorical flourish to sway him. But it is frustrating to see whataboutism once again rule the day.
No, I think that's a weak argument. I think what it depends on what your definition of is a weak argument, especially in terms of what Trump means by it. Mm-hmm. That's what it came off as to me. I think you might be saying like, I think the focus, and I also don't think that they're gonna get him on this. And I think that this general like,
get him on Trump, what?
On him in directly inciting violence. They're just not gonna get
him. You mean they're gonna acquit him overall? Yes.
Yeah, and I don't think
I agree.
I don't think it's a strong argument. You just are not gonna get it. I think what the best chance is to appeal not to what Trump meant by it, but what a reasonable person would assume those people in that group would interpret from it, and the responsibility you bear as the president. Because like a minute and a half after saying we're gonna walk down, you know, I'm gonna walk with you down and we're gonna fight, he says peacefully and patriotically. And that's what he thinks is his kind of get out of jail free card. And if the shoe were on the other foot and someone said, I want you to be peaceful, I would then have to go back, take a step. If it was some other group and some other person besides the president, who's responsible if it turns into violence, I would say, well, let's look at the, and this is what the impeachment managers have done. Let's look at the pattern over years and years.
Yes.
And it would take a total idiot, and Trump has tested the boundaries of that definition, but would it take a total idiot not to understand that by saying fight, even if they lay, you know, if QAnon and his entire group look at the subtext and he knows this and are looking for the deeper meaning and parsing how they can interpret it, Trump needed to do the thing that the Republicans for years and years have touted as the one amazing thing about American democracy. And that is the peaceful transfer of power.
Yes.
And he has gotten rid of that, not for 12 hours. Not for 30 days, not for 30 hours, not for 72 hours, but for like 72 days.
Yeah.
And continuing to now, but especially on that day, he is still trying to undermine and eliminate American democracy. And at that point, and so I think also there, yeah, so that's my tip.
Yeah, obviously the pattern leading up to it matters. I think, you know, I don't know how much of a part this plays in past First Amendment court cases, but I think your reaction to what happens could give us insight into what your motivations were. Like if I'm in a theater and I say, let's burn this mother down, then as you pointed out, how likely it is that people are to act one way or another, you know, should be included. Like if I'm talking to that, if I'm saying that to a group of people that are holding jugs of gasoline, that might be interpreted differently. But also, if I just say it and then they start lighting fires, and then I just stand there versus shouting, no, 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 stop. No, this isn't what I meant. That tells us a little bit about what you think. And we know exactly what he did and didn't do on the 6th and on the 7th and all the way up until now, actually. And so intent matters. And he has been very clear how little he cared about what happened. Throughout the pandemic, we've speculated about how bad it is and how it didn't necessarily need to be so bad, knowing beyond a shadow of a doubt that thousands, potentially tens of thousands or even more did not need to die. Not even speculating what would it have been like if Trump had really nailed this thing, but what would it have been like if he had pretended to care even a little bit? If Fox hadn't dedicated month after month of their programming to misinforming people and causing them to believe that there is no more important political identity for a person to have than someone who doesn't give an F about COVID. Well, we don't know for sure, especially for any individual part of that, but according to a new Lancet Commission report, the US could have averted 40% of the deaths from COVID-19 had the country's death rates just corresponded with the rates in other high-income G7 countries. Now, of course, we in theory are such a rich country that it's not impossible to speculate that we could have done better than those other countries, but even if we'd only done as well, we could have averted 40% of the deaths. And bear in mind that as of right now, about 470,000 Americans have already died from the coronavirus. That's gonna shoot past 500,000 in the next few weeks. God only knows what it'll end up by the end. So 40% of that is a lot of people. That is more than the vast majority of the wars US has been involved in, let alone any other natural disasters, terror attacks, anything like that. We could not have helped but done better had we really tried at all.
But no, John, you misunderstand the glory of the American healthcare system, which parallels the glory of the American dream itself, which is, yes, you may, first of all, construction. Yes, you may have the opportunity, you may have died because you were not wealthy, but had you been wealthy, you would have lived longer. And yeah, that's the American dream. That's the American healthcare system. The wealthy, you should be very happy, because you live in a country where the wealthy can do that much better than you.
Yeah.
Because they can afford to.
Yeah. We have the number one healthcare system. Technically, for a few people, most need not apply. That's the thing. Like, sure, yeah. And by the way, some of those who were involved in this, I think agree that this is, look, obviously the acute thing is Trump and not caring and right-wing media and all of that, but really a lot about America really played into this. So Dr. Mary Bassett, director of Harvard University's FXB Center for Health and Human Rights said, the US has fared so badly with this pandemic, but the bungling can't be attributed only to Mr. Trump. It also has to do with these societal failures. That's not going to be solved by a vaccine. And those societal failures, there's a lot that goes into that about our healthcare system, the lack of both access and more importantly, affordability. That is a situation that has been bad for a very long time. It was made worse under Trump. And if you go into the actual study, they show decrease in health insurance coverage rates amongst different groups like Latinos, Native Americans, Alaska Native people, dropping by multiple percentage points. That is millions of people who ended up not having insurance, who went into the Trump administration having it. But that number is as high as it is because we haven't fundamentally solved the problem of access to health insurance and healthcare. So look, there's a lot here. I mean, just US life expectancy overall is far worse than other countries. If you're interested in this, please go and see the actual study. But this really is an indictment, not just of the Trump administration, although that is in the pandemic, the biggest single problem, but a lot of problems that will remain post-Trump. Some of which there have been proposals that could potentially deal with it, but quite a few sort of structural elements of our society that are not truly being questioned by the new administration are unlikely to be solved, leaving us for the next pandemic in a sort of similar, although marginally better prepared, because I assume Biden will actually care whether these people live or die, which isn't something we can say about Trump. But that it's a lot, obviously, but it is important. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of lives on the line.
And I would wager you do not need to have a pandemic to learn these lessons. And a lot of the solutions we could implement in order to improve the situation and have fixed this will be better for people when there's not a pandemic. And just so everyone knows, when you talk to your conservative friend who says, like, listen, we are that country that makes the innovations. We are the country that has a capitalist intent behind our innovation strategy, and that is why we can soar higher for the highest people. They ignore that the lowest people are much lower here. And the vaccine is a German company. Like, there are other countries that are making these innovations. So that's a BS argument. And the one thing that will end the conversation altogether, full stop, is that in America, we spend twice as much per person on healthcare than those other countries, and we die sooner.
Yep.
So the capitalist argument is wrong, that competition drives prices down. It costs twice as much to do this stuff here in America. So that is just profiteering because your health is an inelastic good. Just because the price goes up doesn't mean the demand goes down, because you're gonna die. And it artificially creates, and you wanna stay alive, it artificially creates higher stakes, inelastic demand conditions, because rather than the alternative, which is a more preventive care focused situation in which you can just go to the doctor and get treatment when you're feeling a little sick. Mm-hmm. People avoid the doctor like not just the plague, but a financial plague, because it will ruin them. And they don't go until they're in a position where they are sick enough where they have to spend every dollar they have or will ever have through debt to stay alive. And it just is it's a worse system than the alternative.
It is. And this is one of the situations where an oversimplified take that I probably give very often is nobody learned anything, nothing matters, all of that. It's not true. Like, some of what you're pointing out there, I think people learned some things about our healthcare system last year. I think that there was some learning. It is frustrating that some, I think, seemingly easy lessons to learn really haven't been learned. Like, for instance, your access to health insurance being tied directly to employment. Maybe we can come up with some situations where that's a bad call. But I don't think that fundamentally is a thing that the American people understand needs to change. But yeah, I think that there has been some learning. There were a number of opportunities, virtually limitless, where Donald Trump could have pretended that he cared about the pandemic, that he could have actually led, not just in terms of doing something, but providing an example that many of his adoring fans could have gone by. Masking, social distancing, not joking about the entire thing, not thinking it's just an opportunity to make racist jokes, all of that. But I think one of the most important opportunities, although late in the pandemic, was when he himself got sick with COVID. For many of us outsiders, it seemed like sort of karma finally hitting. It was the inevitable outcome of his, careless attitude towards the pandemic. And now we're finding out that it was actually worse than we thought. He was sicker with COVID-19 in October than had publicly been acknowledged at the time, with extremely depressed blood oxygen levels at one point and a lung problem associated with pneumonia caused by the coronavirus. His prognosis became so worrisome before he was taken to Walter Reed that officials believed he would need to be put on a ventilator, which is obviously that is a terrible point in someone's battle with COVID. People familiar with his health said that he was found to have lung infiltrates, which occur when the lungs are inflamed and contain substances such as fluid or bacteria. Their presence, especially when a patient is exhibiting other symptoms, can be a sign of an acute case of the disease. Another bad sign was his blood oxygen level, which dipped into the 80s. The disease is considered severe when the blood oxygen level falls to the low 90s. Now, he was hit by this, and not like in a casual way. Like, he was hit hard. And in theory, it was a chance for him to reevaluate the way he had been presenting himself with the disease, how serious it is. But he cared more about his public image, and that was what won out. The former president resisted being taken from the White House to Walter Reed, relenting when aides told him that he could walk out on his own or risk waiting until the US Secret Service was forced to carry him out if he got sicker. So he was willing to risk getting sicker until he was told, "You'll look bad if that happens." And they lied about all of this, by the way. Throughout, they said that he was working hard, which isn't even true when he isn't sick. They tried to hide all of this throughout when it was an opportunity to show people how serious this is. This is a country that is filled with millions and millions of people who have a varying spectrum of the disease literally doesn't exist beliefs to it's being trumped up and people have other stuff, but they're calling it COVID, or sure, you can get it, but it's not that bad. It's just the flu. Him actually coming clean with the American people could have gotten through to some of those people if anything was going to. And instead, he chose to pretend that he's some sort of hero, that it wasn't really affecting him. It wouldn't change his behavior, nor should it change yours. We always say Republicans only learn when something hits them close to home, but he has proven that that not even that is true for some Republicans. For him, even hitting inside of his own lungs wasn't enough for him to change his behavior. And there you're seeing what happened immediately after he left, that what seemed at the time to be a death gasp that he was letting out.
Yeah, so it's so perfect, really, because Trump is that guy. Trump is that guy who only cares about appearances. He has the whole hair thing that is his defining characteristic. Everything that every building he has to be gold plated. He started an airline where he bought really crappy planes, but wanted gold toilets essentially in them. And that weighed down the planes, so they were more at risk for crashing. And that same theme played out through this. And the idea that there was a worse alternative, optics wise, than him slowly walking out of the White House where they have a clinic and being airlifted to Walter Reed Medical Center. The fact, I mean, we all kind of felt it. We're like, and we reported on it at the time on the Young Turks, which was basically to say, like, it is really bad. It is really bad. And we're all thinking, what if he dies? We wouldn't have thought that if it was like with Leahy. They were like, they took Leahy to the hospital and then he was back on his feet in like a few days. But Trump 100% got airlifted to a private wing of the medical center.
Yep.
And then they, as you say, they had that those like photos of him like, I'm doing work, I'm really okay.
Like an empty desk. And then remember, he exposed Secret Service officers so that he could ride in a car and wave feebly at some of his fans to pretend that it wasn't serious. That was what he was doing, was pretending it's not a disease that you actually have to care about. While also, and we made the point, you just made the point, like that he gets to be airlifted to a private hospital where he'll have Dr. House and their entire team operating on him. Other people don't get that. Other politicians don't even get that. Republican representative died of COVID. Not everybody gets that. Like, we have the concept of Dr. Johnny Bananas to point this out, that sure, for some, the most rich, the most politically connected, they can, you know, we're not going to go into the in depth into it, but he got treatments that hadn't even yet been approved by the FDA because he's the president and because he's rich and because he's powerful. But other people don't get that. It could have been an opportunity for him to come to grips with that. I get this thing. Other people don't. Other people in my same situation would have died. But I will learn nothing from that. I will try to ensure that other people learn nothing from this. And that resulted in really horrendous behavior. And by the way, not for nothing, that was October. So what happened in Thanksgiving? And what happened in Christmas? A country that had been gradually led to believe that this wasn't something you had to worry about anymore, went and partied and traveled and hung out with their families. And that's how we got to a point where we're losing between 3,000 and 4,000 people a day. It wasn't nearly as bad back in October. Maybe if he had taken this really seriously and had really tried to drill into the right, into his MAGA fans, that this is something serious. I know it was in me. I had the infiltrates. I don't want anyone else to experience this. Maybe Thanksgiving wouldn't have gone the way it did. And maybe Christmas wouldn't have gone the way it did. And maybe we'd be sitting at 300,000 deaths instead of 470.
It's and from a just like a purely observational standpoint, it is one of those. So when you think about it from a philosophical standpoint, almost, he is an ego fundamentalist. Like that, he is a fundamentalist and it's all about ego. And you always wondered, like, And there's a lot of presidents who folks have criticized because they didn't go hard enough in the paint for certain things. And Trump is that guy who never once really backed down, issued an apology, walked something back. And you wonder, what would that do to the country? And we watched it happen in the pre-COVID times. And the answer was, it just got louder and more people watched the news. But when a real crisis faced the country, it proved that we were right saying that folks kind of need to have some level of decency and some other priority besides themselves, something larger than themselves, some kind of prioritization of American values, democratic values, institutional values. And he just, in the time when it was challenged the most, he failed that challenge at every level, every step of the way. And he told people to inject themselves with bleach because he didn't care enough about anyone else to even moderately consider input from someone beside like the weird voice on his shoulder, essentially.
Yeah.
And we got to see that. And to our credit as a country, Americans said, we're not gonna give you the keys for another 4 years.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's what we got. And almost certainly, like, if he, again, not if he had really nailed this thing, he'd done exactly what I would have wanted, but if he had pretended a little bit, if he had literally just said every once in a while, yeah, you should wear a mask, you know, because it's a deadly disease, then he'd still be president. The Republicans would still have the Senate.
No, I disagree.
It didn't matter. You don't think that would have?
He would have won. And I totally get your point, but so much of that ship had sailed. You know, he already laid so much of the foundation. And along the way, he did say stuff like, be peaceful. It was always too late. It was that, you know, there's some bad people in that group. But he also said there are very fine people on both sides.
Yeah.
Like he had already, like the, it's just a new brand of dog whistle that you can hear every tone. It's just that your brain can't handle hearing every tone that we start tuning out some part of it. We like, and I've used every metaphor along the way of it, just like your justice butthole that he keeps stretching out where you can't even feel when you're getting violated. The fart smell.
You used a lot of metaphors. I would keep looking. Because anyone has got to be better than that.
Yeah. We've gone nose blind.
We've gone nose blind. Okay. We don't know exactly yet what the stimulus bill is going to look like in terms of the checks, raising the minimum wage and all of that. But we do have aspirations, we have hopes, things for, you know, like even beyond it, things like canceling student loan debt and all of that. This is a national conversation that is going on right now. And so on the right, what is their contribution? Well, I believe it was Fox and Friends had Dave Ramsey on, the money guy. And here is what he had to say about canceling student loan debt.
Well, to start with, we need to understand, we got $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. $192 billion out of that, not so much. Let's do some ratios, folks. If we're gonna do math, we probably ought to play math. Now, on top of that, when you dig into it, the whole idea that student loans being forgiven is going to stimulate the economy, that assumes that people were getting ready to pay them off this year and instead would use that same $40,000 that they were getting ready to pay off their student loan and stimulate the economy with it. Again, that's economic hogwash. It's smoke and mirrors. It's simply not going to happen.
Like this guy has written books and things. He's the money guy. And I don't know anything, but I know that that's wrong in multiple different ways. Brett, first your thoughts.
It's like you just said that there's a lot of people that are gonna be, you're complaining that it's going to affect things negatively, right? He's basically saying we don't need this. It's part of a problem. And then saying that like there's no benefit and there's no benefit to doing it. Well, then do it. Like do it. If it's inconsequential by your definition, let's try it. Because I hate to tell Dave Ramsey, who I do like watching. He is a fun guy to watch or has been in the past. He's just like kind of a personality. Mm-hmm. But let's see what happens when people don't have to pay back that money. Because the $40,000 debt, eliminating that much from their outstanding debt will also reduce their monthly payments. And a lot of the times having that much in your overall debt as Skip tells me, the director, if I didn't have student debt, I'd immediately buy a car. Like, having that much in, that's another like basic fundamental economic thing for people in their everyday lives. If they have a large amount of debt, they're always paying interest on it. And that's the problem. There are people who complain about having this much student loan debt and they've been paying it for 15 years and the principal still hasn't gone down.
Or so it's gone up.
Or it's like gone up, right.
The amount has gone up, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's, first of all, the idea that it's dumb to propose canceling some of the debt because there's more debt than that, when he knows full well, this is the portion of the debt that he can unilaterally cancel because it's the federally backed kind, not the private kind. Like, if he doesn't know that, then that's crazy. If he does know that, it's incredibly dishonest. And that is like saying, well, that's only a little bit of the overall debt, is in theory an inroads to a conversation about eventually canceling all debt, not to close the door on canceling any of it. And that aside, it's hogwash to believe that people would take that $40,000 and instead use it to stimulate the economy. What could you possibly surmise they would do with that money that is likely to happen and that would not stimulate the economy? Honestly, anyone in the chat right now, anyone who's got student loan debt, if it suddenly vanished and instead of the $200, $500, $1,000, more than $1,000 every month that you have to spend on that, what are you stuffing your mattress with the cash? What are you doing that would not actually stimulate the economy? But that guy, again, he's a professional money person. He's playing math and he's written many books, many, many leather bound books, and he knows what's going on. We don't. But that's what Fox is hearing. Again, Fox is there to speak to the economically anxious left behind Americans that haven't gotten assistance from the government. And oh, they just happen to spend their time bringing on people that tell them that the government doing anything to improve their economic situation is actually a bad thing and you shouldn't trust it.
Yeah, so stupid.
That is how right wing populism works. Come in for the immigration demonization and stay for more of that, actually. That's all that they've got, actually.
Dave, I just think there's a moral hazard doing this. You're young,
absolutely.
You signed a financial contract, you have an obligation to pay that money back.
Absolutely. And well, listen, there's some situations where folks are hurting and this thing has become, it's gotten completely out of hand.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people's lives who have been destroyed by this program. Somebody needs some relief somewhere. I'm fine with that. But this has nothing to do with really helping people. This is a political gimme by progressives.
None of that makes any sense. None of that makes any sense. So it's a moral hazard because you signed on to it, so you have to pay it. Okay, should they have had to sign on to it, to something that fundamentally could crush them in debt for the rest of their life? And by the way, what if they hadn't signed on to it? What would have happened?
No.
They couldn't have gone to school. And the Fox host is saying he is perfectly fine with not helping out people who signed it and leaving us with a country full of people that, if they're not born into wealth, if they're not a Swanson heir, well then screw you. You don't get to go to college. And if you do, we're never gonna help you. And if you're crushed for the rest of your life, hey buddy, you signed on to it. You signed on to an incredibly unfair system.
The moral hazard is creating this whole cycle in the first place, where you give a cheaper, you mandate essentially, just de facto, there's a mandate that you need to have a college education. A high school diploma isn't enough anymore. And then you get people these student loans, which are either federally backed or private. Either way, it essentially increases the number of people who have access to money to do what? To give it to schools. Those schools run up their tuition because now there is money coming in. So the moral hazard is the growing cost of undergraduate and graduate education in the country. And that's something that we need to fix. And that's why folks are eyeing free college, not free college, but tax funded college for 2 year education, 2 year junior college education, and maybe 4 year college education in certain places. But that's the moral problem with it. That's what's so frustrating about what he's saying.
Yeah, and then for Dave Ramsey to end by saying, you know, people's lives have been ruined by this program that the Fox host is totally defending and thinks shouldn't be changed, and they really do need help, but not like this.
Well, just a political thing.
Then what are you proposing? You say they have to be helped. They're being victimized by the program. This would help them, but suspiciously you're not interested. And why not? Because it's just political. Well, it is a political program. That is what we're talking about here. It's gonna be political. He can't come up with an actual reason. It's like, what a great scam. I really think people should need to be helped, but not in any of those ways that group is proposing. I'm with the people who propose doing literally nothing. It's like, you can say you want help, but there's no evidence that that's actually true.
And then it's worth saying that this whole argument that y'all signed on to a contract, and if it bankrupts you, it bankrupts you. Well, what happened to the big banks in the 2008 crisis? Mm-hmm. They got bailed out. So why don't we bail out the American people who, I hate to break it to Dave Ramsey, when they have money in their pocket, they'll spend it on the stuff that they're not buying right now because they can't afford it. Food, like medicine.
Perhaps rent. And like Red Artifact says in the Twitch chat, and by the way, if you avoid the moral hazard by not signing that and not going to college, what is Fox gonna say about you later on when you are suffering, when you can't get ahead?
Right.
You should have tried harder. You should lift yourself up, go to college, get an education.
And that's it. It's all that they want to have it. They want to have it always at all times. It's like the folks who raided the Capitol who are conservatives and they say, listen, it's all about, if you ask them every other day of the week, what is it about? Oh, it's all about taking personal responsibility for your actions. And the people who don't do that are letting us down, those collective handout takers. Yeah. But then you ask them now in a court of law, so why did you raid the Capitol? And they're like, well, the president made me do it. I'm powerless. I have no individual decision-making power. It's all his fault. So which is it? So frustrating.
Eckhart in the chat has an interesting theory that Dave Ramsey doesn't want the debt canceled because his radio program gets its ratings by helping people take responsibility and pay off their debt.
I mean, there's so many. Maybe. Those shows also have like debt consolidation services that they—
Sure, yeah.
That is nonstop. That's probably like 1/5 of the advertising on a show like that when they're not telling you how to like, you know, Australian dream alleviate your psoriatic back pain or something.
Exactly. It's the end of the week and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, Brett, we've got our garbage can here. Who's going in it this week?
My garbage person, I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to choose him because it sounds like such like a plug and play, he wasn't trying this week kind of person, but it is Tucker Carlson. Tucker Swanson bro Carlson. So there's a couple clips from last night on Tucker's show that really infuriated me. The first is how he's trying to say that he's getting canceled by everyone else in the media and Fox, who is under fire for essentially fanning Trump's flames of lies about democracy and wants to be held, and people are trying to hold them accountable for it. He says, no, no, no. Fox News is just saying something different, and they stand as that lone life preserver in a sea of uniformity.
Of all of those, it's this channel, Fox News, that is the most significant hurdle to getting everyone to sing from the same song sheet. Fox is the last big organization in the American news media that differs in even the smallest ways from the other big news organizations. The only one, that's it, just us. At this point, there's everyone else in the media standing in crisp formation in their starched matching uniforms and their little caps, patiently awaiting orders from the billionaire class. And then there's Fox News, off by itself, occasionally saying things that are slightly different from everyone else.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
First of all, the starched uniforms, I think that's like in their little caps. He wants to say that every other big news organization is North Korea, essentially, and you're in your starched uniform. Dude, you, Tucker Carlson, are a starched Oxford shirt come to life.
He has starch on his shirt as he's saying that.
And like, dude, I hate to tell you, but you look, and earlier he talks about like, I think Anna Navarro and the arguments that she memorized at Dartmouth. Like, dude, you are a cartoon drawing of Ivy League elitism, period. That you're a floppy haired pleated pant. That's what you are. And then the idea that it's like, oh, we're different, so we're better. No, 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 no. Poison food is different from non-poison food. Poison food is not better. Mm-hmm. So when he says we say something different than everyone else, that's not enough to say that you have some kind of superiority. Because mm-hmm. what you're saying is a bunch of lies. The lies about, and he's talking about other people in the media who want to hold Fox News accountable for spreading election lies, specifically about Smartmatic and Dominion voting systems. And what the different thing that he's so proud that Fox News is saying really is mm-hmm. is essentially made up nonsense that is that they didn't counteract by providing all the information that was available to everyone else. They didn't provide that on the people's shows who are getting sued until there was a threat of them getting sued. Yeah. So the accountability makes you say the thing that everyone else is saying, but the only reason those other people are saying it is because they are actual journalists doing actual journalism things. You on your show, which is just a series of rhetorical questions and occasional hat tips to white supremacists, he keeps asking those questions, even though, dude, just look it up. This idea that
you have a team.
The question is not the destination, moron, especially on a news station. We're different because we don't actually go after news. We don't actually answer the questions. We just act them. We just ask them. Aren't we quirky and different and neat? That's
and Brett. Cross. Yeah. There's two things about we're the only ones who ask questions that I like about that he's not being explicit about. So recently, what has he been saying that's different from CNN and MSNBC? What free inquiry has he been defending? Anti-vax stuff about the COVID vaccine and QAnon. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it. He wants people who believe those things to watch his show. I get it. Having people watch a show is nice. That is a nice thing. And the other thing is, he keeps saying, like, he's talking, we're the only ones who ask questions, and he is ostensibly differentiating himself from CNN and MSNBC. But that's not really what he's doing. We're the only ones that are different. Don't pay attention to OAN and Newsmax. Get out of here. It's only us. We're the only ones. No one else even exists. Because he knows that Fox has lost a lot of viewers to those other networks. And the exact like questioning and open inquiry and anti-cancel culture stuff that he does, he's trying to appeal to the crazies. And he's scared because OAN and Newsmax do a better job of trying to appeal to the crazies because they're crazier. Because they don't have the sponsors and stuff like that they worry about losing necessarily. So he's like trying to like say that he's a bulwark against the mainstream media. But what he's really doing is protecting his ass. He's worried about other right-wing crazies taking his audience.
And the evidence is in there because he used the word big. We're the only big news company doing it. So that's borne out even more by that. And I'm glad you bring up this weird thing he's doing where he's essentially promoting his show and giving people whom he talks to like their children the kind of information you would give to children to get them to watch you say it over and over again every night. And I wasn't going to make him garbage person for that, but here is what Tucker Carlson said about the woman who got shot in the Capitol and the general reaction from people on a show that airs at 8 p.m. Take a look.
Just yesterday, Christoph suggested that this show, the one you're watching, was somehow guilty of terrorism, of violence, something that we've been opposed consistently for 4 years. How are we guilty of that and why? Well, because Ashley Babbitt, the unarmed protester shot to death at the Capitol on January 6th, apparently watched this show from time to time at 8 p.m. Now, keep in mind that Ashley Babbitt is dead. She paid quite a price for trying to enter the speaker's lobby without permission, and no one mourned her. What kind of country is it, by the way? And we're saying this as a show that was against what they did on January 6th from the second they did it. But what kind of country is it where nobody says, whoa, wait, that's kind of sad. They shot an unarmed woman? Is that really a death penalty offense? How hard-hearted are we that no one can even acknowledge that's sad, which it is?
No, but she was just
that.
Yeah. Yeah. She was just trying to get in without permission. That is an amazing feat of sort of technically describing something, but really missing all of the points of it.
I've mentioned on your show why it's sad that she got caught, that she got shot. Course.
Because she shouldn't have been there. She shouldn't have been deceived by people like Tucker Carlson and believing insane things. That is very sad.
100% right. And the only other thing I'll add is the extra layer that is the reason I said out loud, oh, he's my garbage person, it's Tucker Carlson, is because he's pretending that he's saying we should be sad for her. The night before on his show, he is trying to excuse Derek Chauvin's behavior of kneeling on George Floyd's neck for 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. And not saying it's sad, saying, no, that guy does drugs. You shouldn't feel bad for him. Shooting, yep. He refers to her as a killed, unarmed person, to Ashley Babbitt or whatever her name was. What about all the other unarmed people who have been shot, killed, murdered by police? He wants you to not think that that's sad at all.
Nope.
And if he does, it's just in passing, so he can make his way more insidious rhetorical point. He says, oh, it's sad, but let me tell you why you shouldn't care. And that's what makes him a garbage person.
Exactly. For my garbage person of the week, I have one. And this is about this individual, but it is about this trend. It's something we've been expecting and now it's happening. These are the people who were perfectly happy to stand by for 4 to 5 years and let Trump do whatever he wanted. But now, wait, I also want to be able to do stuff. So would you guys like to pretend that I actually stood up to him and that I'm different from him? And that is for today, Nikki Haley. So she is going to go in the garbage and then I'm going to explain. She is the subject of this big article, this thing in Politico, where she is getting some credit for saying, we need to acknowledge he let us down, talking about Trump. He went down a path he shouldn't have, and we shouldn't have followed him, and we shouldn't have listened to him, and we can't let that ever happen again. I am very opposed to the things that he's done. And in that quote, you might think that, but almost everything else, and I'm not just talking about everything else about her time under Trump, never questioning him, all of that. Everything else, even in the interview in Politico, does not buttress any kind of point that she actually disagrees with Trump or is willing to be directly critical of him. She talked to him after the election a number of times while he started to, you know, like spread all these insane conspiracy theories about the vote. He got people whipped into a frenzy, making death threats against pretty much everyone. He tried to overthrow the vote. She talked to him multiple times. And she would just say that like he honestly believes it. He really does think that he lost legitimately. When he was talking about that, I didn't address it. Like she didn't actually ever, in her own words now, try to convince Trump to not overthrow democracy or to not do all of these things. This isn't like 3 years ago. This is just a month or two ago. She still was just passively listening to Trump. And she's like, Tim Alberta's the reporter for Politico. He keeps asking her, but like, it's not true. The things he was saying weren't true. We knew that it wasn't true. He was lying to all these people, in her defense repeatedly, and you can go and read it. It's freely available on the internet right now. Was just, he really believed it. He honestly believed it. He's being true when he says that he believes this, even though she knows that it's not true. Now, she also thinks that we need to move past Trump, but is she going to be a part of that process? Well, with regard to the impeachment, she'd said, I don't even think there's a basis for impeachment. Now they're going to turn around and bring about impeachment, yet they say they're for unity. I mean, at some point, I mean, give the man a break. I mean, move on. Now that was a few weeks ago. Give the man a break, move on. Couple weeks later, oh God, I need to imply that I'm actually different in some way. So again, we don't need to impeach him, but what we need to do, quote, is take the good that he built, leave the bad that he did, and get back to a place where we can be a good, valuable, effective party. But at the same time, it's bigger than the party. I hope our country can come together and figure out how we pull this back. Okay, so how do we do that? Like, how do we move past all of this? How do we make sure that we weed out the bad? He asked her, how should the president be held accountable? And she said, I think he's going to find himself further and further isolated. I think his business is suffering at this point. I think he's lost any sort of political viability he was going to have. I think he's lost his social media, which meant the world to him. I mean, I think he's lost the things that really could have kept him moving. And this is a sentiment, by the way, that we're seeing for more and more Republicans. This headline, even with acquittal, GOP sees trial ending Trump's shot at future office. That is everything you need to know about Nikki Haley and these Republicans, who more than likely never liked Trump, but weren't willing to actually speak up about it. No, they believe we will move on. The country will move past him. He won't be able to run, but we don't want to do anything to produce that. We don't want to actually stop him. We don't want to convict him. We don't want to do anything. We just sort of hope that we can do what we've been doing for 4 years, which is just sort of sitting on the sidelines and assuming that things will get better and trying to make sure that we come out of it looking as good as possible. That is why she and an increasing number of Republicans are garbage people.
Yeah, and it's like that reliance on people. So they want to seem crazy to the crazies, sane to the sane, and rely on the thankless job of sanity to keep America together in the meantime.
Yeah. Ugh. Now, the community garbage person of the week, at number 5 this week. Thank you to the 10,000 of you who voted on our community page. At 6% of the vote, we have Newsmax host for lying about the number of deaths on January 6th. That is Greg Kelly, who said only one person died. Let's see, in number 4, with 13% of the vote, we have Matt Gaetz for his creepy Marjorie Greene cigarette comment. That was a weird one. Go take a look at last week's garbage person if you want to see that. Let's see, then we have at 18% of the vote, Rand Paul for doodling during the impeachment hearings. Coming in at number 2, Nancy Mace for lying in her attempt to discredit AOC's experience with 20% of the vote. But number 1, Ron Johnson at 43% of the vote for blaming Pelosi for the Capitol insurrection. He was joined just a day ago by Lindsey Graham doing the same thing. We think nothing bad happened at the Capitol, but if it did, probably Nancy Pelosi is responsible for it. So thank you to the community for voting. Ron Johnson is this week's community garbage person. And Brett, thank you for joining us on this episode. Very excited to join you in our production meeting in just a couple of minutes. Thank you as always.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. And everybody, we're apparently very over. So thank you for joining us today. I'm gonna be leading the first hour of the Power Panel with Cenk Uygur and a guest later on today. So definitely stay tuned for that. And until then, stay safe out there, stay sane out there. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.